Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tahvayi. A set of attacks in southern Israel near the border with Egypt, near the Red Sea port city of Eilat. The Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, Ehud Barak, he said the attacks were organized in the Gaza Strip. Hours later, Israel attacks the southern Gaza Strip, killing seven Palestinians, including a girl. Barak, however, did not put forward any evidence for implicating Palestinians in Gaza. Well, in this news analysis, we will discuss Israel's posturing, how this may turn focus away from their own domestic problems, especially the growing protest movement, and the significance of the timing of this attack in Israel as Palestinians are getting ready for their September bid for statehood at the UN.
Israel has carried out airstrikes on the Gaza Strip only hours after unknown gunmen attacked two buses and a military vehicle some 30 kilometers north of the Red Sea resort of Eilat near the Egyptian border. Several Palestinians were killed in the Israeli airstrike. Israel has claimed that the attackers came all the way across the Egyptian border from the Gaza Strip and passed through the Sinai Desert to carry out the attacks. Seven Israelis, including a soldier, were killed in the attacks. Hamas has denied any involvement.
We stress that we have no involvement in what happened today in Eilat. The Israeli threats made by the occupation leaders are but an attempt at expressing discontent with an internal Israeli crisis and an attempt at reflecting the crisis at the Gaza Strip.
The violence seems to have taken some pressure off Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whose government is facing its biggest domestic challenge, an ongoing protest against rising living costs. The latest developments also come as Palestinians gear up for a United Nations General Assembly vote on Palestinian statehood on September the 20th. Some experts say that Tel Aviv might be trying to undermine the Palestinian bid.
We're going to try to get some answers to that. Joining us is the human rights lawyer Amjad Salfiti, who joins us from London. We're the professor of political science at Al-Azhar University, Mukhayra Abu Saida, who joins us from Gaza. And rounding off the list from the Executive Intelligence Review, Bill Jones joins us from Washington. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to go first to Mukhayra Abu Saida. Hours after the attack, Israel was quick to conclude first that the planning had occurred in Gaza, no reference to Hamas, and then saying that gunmen came from Gaza via Egypt. Why do you think Israel made that conclusion?
Well, as you just mentioned, it is still very early to decide whether the attackers came from the Gaza Strip to go all this way, about 250 kilometers from the borders of Gaza all the way to the city of Eilat. Still, the Palestinian government here in Gaza has denied any responsibility for the attack on the Israelis on Eilat, and they denied any relationship with this attack. But Israel was very quick to basically blame the Palestinians, blame Hamas, who is in control of the Gaza Strip for about 4 years now, and attacked, as it was mentioned in the report earlier, the leader of the a Palestinian group, Popular Resistance Committees. He was assassinated with a number of his fellows, and a number of Palestinian civilians were killed. It's very clear that this is a golden opportunity for Netanyahu and his government to escape the internal housing crisis and the internal protest, which has been going on in Israel for more than a month now. And it is definitely another opportunity for Netanyahu to undermine and complicate the Palestinian bid for statehood, which is going to be requested by the Palestinians in September 20th when the UN General Assembly meets next month. Definitely, this is Netanyahu is trying to exploit this incident for his benefit and the benefit of his government, and probably escalate the situation with the Palestinians and Gaza. And maybe we are going to see definitely a deterioration in the security situation between Gaza and Israel in the few coming hours and
days. Of course,
there's
a lot of favorable scenarios that would be concluded for Israel based on this. Let me reflect on what you said about the place where this occurred. You mentioned from the Gaza Strip. If we can have the video roll for geographically to get an idea of where the Gaza Strip is located and, of course, where this incident took place. As our guest there, Mohammed Abu Saada, mentioned, here's an overview. We're going to go straight there to where the Gaza Strip is, which we're going to see in a second. There's the relationship of the distance, of which is roughly 222 kilometers from Gaza all the way down to Eilat that sits on top of the Red Sea. And, of course, to the left of that, we see where Egypt is located. And that's the distance that would have been carried through on Israeli territory for any group or person or what have you to travel from the Gaza Strip to that town. So geographically, that gives a sense as to whether that would be a possibility, which seems very remote. So let me ask you, Amjad Salfiti, Hamas, they have denied any involvement. They have said that they operate only within the occupied Palestine, that Israel wants to wage another war on Gaza. Give us your reaction to how Hamas has reacted to what has occurred.
Well, to be honest, I mean, the only reaction that came out from the Hamas movement or the government in Gaza is one of denial. They have disassociated themselves from this act of what Israel labels as terrorism. But in any event, regardless of that, there is no nexus or evidence that has been adduced by Barak to justify launching an attack, which is nothing less than a collective punishment to the civilian population in Gaza. I mean, Barak has to go much further than just to link, according to his own wishes and conclusions, this attack to either Hamas or any of the factions, Palestinian factions in Gaza. He's got to and he's required to show us the evidence as to why he decided that this incident is linked and has been perpetrated by Palestinians from the Gaza Strip, or it has emanated as a, if you like, if you want, a fidayeen operation. It has emanated from the Gaza. It really is not logical. It does not make sense. But I think Israel stands to benefit on a number of fronts out of this. A, this is going to be used in the future to show that Israel again is the victim, regardless of the Arab Spring, the revolts in Egypt, say. They're going to argue that the government that is in Egypt currently or any future government is going to be a weak government, is not going to provide security and secure borders for Israel. Indeed, Israel has started its fencing off its borders, but I think they haven't managed more than 400 kilometers more to be carried out, or sorry, that was 40 kilometers. So there is that argument that Israel will benefit from. We have to also understand that the Israeli population themselves have been for the last few weeks really sort of opposing economical lack of performance by the government, has been demonstrating very much like in the Arab streets. There is that issue, there is the internal issue, and I think Barak and Netanyahu would both take advantage of this to ease off the pressure, internal pressure from within Israel. There is also the fact that this will ensure, if it's linked to Hamas, that Hamas will be kept in isolation, and Abbas in his efforts, or in Hamas and Fatah's, if you like, efforts to reunite the Palestinian territories and reconcile their differences, this is going to be used again by Israel to show that Abbas is associating with terrorists, and accordingly he is not a good partner in peace. So there are these issues. One ought not to forget, like my friend has already mentioned, that the 20th of September is so close by. I think to a large extent Israel is cornered in that respect, regardless of whether the Palestinians would obtain recognition for their statehood. That is a different issue, but that would show the double hypocrisy or the standards, double standards of the international community if they were to vote against. But for Israelis, it's going to show that this is the sort of state that we are going to have on our borders. And again, you know, the famous, if you like, Zionist propaganda myth that they need secure borders and they cannot afford to have terrorists. setting up a state next door to the state of Israel. So there's all sorts of arguments, all sorts of benefits. But the main thing is really how could the Israelis link this up so quickly without any evidence to Hamas when Hamas has got extensive borders with the occupied territories or the historical Palestine Israel to launch its attacks. Certainly there is more concentration if you like, military targets there, and they are relatively at abundance for them to carry out similar operations at less cost of organization, logistics, and chances of success. So I really have my doubts as mm-hmm. to the logic behind this allegation, and I think without it being substantiated, it is yet again a very good example of how the state of Israel will never abide by international law, will not take its issues to the Security right. Council, and will just take the law into its own hands.
Well, it's interesting. Also, some of the reports did indicate that at first Israel was blaming Gaza in general on what occurred. But one of the countries not mentioned extensively, and the points you made are very well pointed out in terms of what's behind it, is Egypt, which we're going to get to in a second. But I'd like to ask Bill Jones there in the United States. Both guests there have said this puts Israel in a number of favorable positions. I don't want to review that, leaving open an attack on Gaza, support from the UN member states against Palestine's UN recognition, and of course calming their domestic problems. What do you think, Bill Jones? Overall, the more pluses for what has occurred for Israel in some of the things that they have to deal with.
Well, obviously, whenever you have something good happening, there's always some kind of incident or terrorist operation that blows it apart. Now, what good was happening was the fact that there was a growing opposition to Prime Minister Netanyahu, primarily directed on the housing issue. But more broadly, this was a strong political movement objecting to everything that Netanyahu was pushing. And it was ironically sort of a convergence with what has been happening within the Arab countries over the last few months, which indicated at least the beginnings of some kind of an alliance between people on the ground who have been totally disgusted with the system as it now exists in that Middle East. And then all of a sudden you get this terrorist operation, and the Israelis reacted as they did to try and destabilize the opposition on the street, because people who have been focused on Netanyahu and his crimes and his policies now become very frightened, and that Netanyahu is able to use that to really create a regiment the population because of a fear from the outside. In any case, if you look at the issue of a cui bono, in whose interest does this lie, I mean, it's quite clear that this has saved Netanyahu from a really strong opposition. Hopefully that will not die out, but it certainly was a blow at it. And in all of these cases, whether it comes from Egypt or it was in Gaza, it is not in the interest of Hamas. It's certainly not in the interest of Egyptians. But there are outside forces always trying to manipulate this situation who, for one reason or another, don't want peace in the Middle East, don't want stability in the Middle East. And they have these tentacles that are often being used. And I refer often to the old British policy of divide and conquer, in which these things tend to occur. This is the way I would look at it, rather than trying to follow on the ground where the individual terrorists came from.
Well, I think it should be important to point out Egypt in this case in point. Amjad Salfidi, let's look at we can call this the official reaction so far. It came from the governor of Sinai hours after the attack, as a matter of fact. He came out and, quote, he said, he denied that there was any gunfire. And then he said that he ruled out Israeli claims that Palestinian attackers actually infiltrated from their territory. Now, this is while there have been repeated attacks by gunmen in North Sinai on the gas pipeline that provides gas to Israel at below market prices. So given the last piece of information there, if you put it into context for us, why Egypt is not the focus here of being involved in this?
So looking at it in the context of the new Egyptian government and the if you like, the military council that currently rules Egypt, the interim military council that is in power right now, it will be seen as a weakness of them failing to provide sufficient controls over the borders with Israel. This is a very sensitive border, and this could really undermine the rule in Egypt. But this is a very good piece of evidence, given that the Egyptians are more informed about what happens inside their own territory. And the choice of the location is usually a well-guarded point, checkpoint, for the borders between Israel and Egypt. This is a tourist route that Israelis follow to get into Taba, which under the Camp David treaty does not require Israelis to obtain visas to enter. This is inside the Sinai Peninsula. And this strikes me as very strange, because this is a very well-protected and well-guarded piece of borders between Israel and Egypt. This is the part of the borders that is, if you like, there is no Palestinian zone to separate it, but this is borders between Israel itself and the Egyptians. The Palestinians have no sovereignty or territory or occupation of any part of that border. This is a very well-guarded part, as I said, commonly used by tourists, well-guarded, and accordingly, I'm very, very surprised that such an operation, I think the numbers of people, the perpetrators, were about 20 in Egyptian army uniforms. Now, all this, given that Barak has not adduced any evidence and the Israelis are not coming out with any official sort of, if you like, video films or anything to show exactly footage of what happened, we have our doubts about the magnitude of the operation. And I say that, yes, there are big question marks about what exactly happened. And I think the Egyptian version of events should be taken very, very seriously in the absence of any evidence coming from Israel. It really sort of does not make sense that the Palestinians would cross twice the borders to enter a part which is accessible directly from their part of the Palestinian borders. It really does not make sense, but it does serve a number of Israeli issues and really advance much of what is needed by the Israeli government to unite the Israeli public opinion right now, which is divided about a number of issues. Like my friend from Washington has stated, economic is one of them, housing, and there is also the performance or lack of performance by Netanyahu in relation to peace negotiations with the Palestinians.
Okay, Bill Jones, now let's look more in terms of Egypt here. We know that Israel has a peace treaty with Egypt, but we also know what a contested issue it's been, especially with Egyptians, about how Egypt is providing below market value this gas. So does that give rise to the possibility that Israel, given that they may lose that gas deal, perhaps give a reason for them to want to claim Sinai?
Well, I think it would surprise me if there was any direct government involvement in any kind of operation stemming from the Sinai territory. My impression is that, although I'm not as informed about it as the previous speaker, but my impression is that there is a little bit of instability among the Egyptian military that might have created a situation in the Sinai where the borders are not so clear-cut. Or there could be operations ongoing within the Egyptian military. Somebody has his own scenario of trying to pull a stunt like this. Who knows what it is? I tend to look at the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is that there was a movement against the worst elements in the Israeli political elites represented by Netanyahu within Israel itself for the first time in a very, very long time. And that was going to create a different situation in the Middle East, which I think would converge with what has been happening in the Arab Spring. And somebody wanted to blow that apart. The other thing you have to look at is that the international financial system that we now have is now imploding. And especially the role of London Finance is being threatened at its very existence with losing all of its power. And of course, they've always had a role to play in the Middle East. One of the reasons we don't have peace in the Middle East, I think, is that Tony Blair is sitting on top of that group that is supposed to bring about peace. That is what the U.S. has never been willing to confront, and I think they may very well have a role in trying to blow this thing up in order to destabilize the whole situation. But there may very well be an Egyptian role in that, but I doubt very much that it would be a government operation. They have enough problems to deal with. They don't know what things are going to look like within the country. And I don't think they would need that chaos. But somebody there may be playing some very funny games within the context of the Sinai.
Mokhabar Abu Sada, let me bring you back into this conversation. We know that inside Israel, the domestic problems are very severe, very serious. Do you think it'd be a conspiracy theory for Israel to actually somehow be related behind, in one shape or another, again, this is going out on a limb in terms of it being a conspiracy theory, of being the ones to cause an instability security-wise, such as this incident, in order to distract from their domestic problems or to give them ultimately this defensive posture right before the Palestinian bid for the UN for membership, including a host of other issues given where they are located geographically?
Well, let me say the following. I don't really have enough information to say yes or no with regard to this conspiracy theory, whether there are Israelis who are behind such an attack. But throughout the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and the Arab-Israeli conflict, there had been an incident in which some Israeli agents were behind some kind of these attacks to reshuffle the cards in the Arab-Israeli conflict and put the blame on the Arabs. But let me say the following, 2 points. The first point is that the result of this attack today has already benefited Netanyahu and his government. Protesters in the city of Jerusalem has already decided to put an end to their protest against the government as a result of this attack, and to show some kind of solidarity with the government and with the state of Israel. And second, I wanted to say the following with regard to why Egypt has been ruled out of this attack. Let me say that over the past 6 or 7 months, since the collapse of the Mubarak regime in Egypt, there has been a security vacuum in Sinai. For a number of reasons, radicals or militants has already exploded the gas pipeline between Egypt and Israel more than 2 times. And over the past month, there has been a number of incidents in which militants attacked police stations, army posts in the city of Al Arish, which is the capital of Sinai, which basically makes me think that there are some elements within Sinai who might be behind such attack, rather than blaming the Palestinians and Hamas and basically escalate the situation with the Gaza Strip at this moment.
Now, at the same time, though, Israel has attacked Gaza, claiming 7 lives. We're going to have to leave it there. We've ran out of time. Thank you so much. Let me thank my guest, human rights lawyer Amjad Asalfidi from London, professor at political science. He was just speaking now, Al-Azhar University. Mokhabar Abu Sada from the Gaza Strip, and from the Executive Intelligence Review, Bill Jones from Washington. Thank you. And thank you, the viewer, for watching. Send us any questions you may have. Newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikhail Batakhli and the entire team, it's goodbye.